hello and welcome to Film Club. My name is Jeff Yance. I am the program director at the Loft Cinema. And please also welcome occasional filmmaker Heather Lattis.
Hi, Jeff.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay Stevenson.
Hello.
So we're going to talk today about siblings, sibling actors, and in particular, two of our favorites, John and Joan Cusack.
Yes.
Yes. Love them both equally in their own ways. So there's not a whole lot of brother and sister acting duos out there, I don't think. The Gyllenhaals, perhaps.
Sure.
Maggie and Jake. But I think John and Joan Cusack have had a very interesting career. We're going to kind of talk a little bit about that and some of our favorite roles for the two of them. Joan being the older of the two and the sister. I feel like we should maybe talk about her first. So she kind of got started in the early 80s.
Well, they both appeared in 16 Candles.
16 Candles together.
The John Hughes film.
Yes. She got started a little earlier in a movie called My Bodyguard from 1980,
which I love.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And when she was in like a junior high school kind of age. And then, yeah, they started starring in teen movies like 16 Candles together and Class from 83. But then she started, you know, they made, I believe, 9 movies together, which
I think is great
that they like each other enough to star in each other's films. So what kind of favorite film roles do you have for Joan Cusack? I'm curious, Heather.
Well, my all-time favorite is Jessie in the Toy Story series.
Yes.
It's my favorite. Her voice lends itself to that cowgirl so well. It's hard to even, I mean, if you've heard it, you know it. I mean, almost everyone has seen Toy Story, right?
Yes.
Oh, she's amazing as the voice of Jessie in it.
The yodeling cowgirl. Yeah.
And she's so happy. Like, she's got that ability to be happy, but also quirky and smart. And that fits the Jessie's character so well.
Yeah. And Joan Cusack, I think why I love her, that she is also quirky. She seems quirky and likable as a person, which I think comes through in that vocal work she does for Toy Story and a lot of other cartoons she does also.
Yeah, she's in Chicken Little as well. Yeah. I've seen a bunch of times because of my son. But I agree with you. That's one of the things in watching all these Joan Cusack movies. I mentioned to you guys earlier, I went into this thinking I liked John better. Mm. But having watched a bunch of their movies now, I find myself really enamored with Joan Cusack. She seems so fun. Her face is so likable. She's got a really pretty face, but it's not so pretty that you think she would be unapproachable. She seems like a very approachable, very fun person to work with. We always project a lot when we're talking about people we don't know and these famous people. But when I watch her in movies, it's easy to see how directors or casting agents might pick her just because she might be just fun to have on set and a real good personality on set.
Yeah. And she's a great character actor. She very rarely gets to play the lead. But you know that my theory has always been if Joan Cusack's in a film, it's going to be a better film, even if she's in one scene.
Good point.
Because she adds so much kind of intelligence and fun and just kind of a good-naturedness to it. Rusty, what's your favorite Joan Cusack role?
I have a lot, and I watched a lot of stuff to prepare. Like I said, I really liked her in My Blue Heaven as the love interest for Rick Moranis. She's really amazing in that. But where she just shines to me, and she's been nominated, we should mention, for 2 Academy Awards.
Yes.
Best Supporting Actress in Working Girl and in and Out. And she's very funny in and Out.
Oh, yes.
She's hilarious. Yeah. She doesn't realize her fiancé is gay. But I love her in Adam's Family Values. That movie is incredible anyway in that it's so subversive to the Hollywood stereotypical Hollywood movie, and it's really subversive in that from Wednesday Addams and her sabotaging of the play and taking over the Thanksgiving play. It's really amazingly subversive. And then Joan Cusack is too. Here she is, the bad guy, the quote-unquote bad guy in the film, and she's going to kill all the Addams family and take Uncle Fester's money, and they're cheering her on as she's doing it.
Right.
And she's maniacal and crazy and so fun in the role. And here they are just feeling so bad for her. And I love the way that she just turned that whole thing, and the movie itself does turns everything on its head, but she turns the bad guy character on its head really brilliantly.
Oh, yeah, and kind of playing against type, that she's playing the bad character and kind of a bombshell.
Yes, definitely.
Which she doesn't often get to play.
No, that's right. She's seen as, I mean, she's always in pretty form-fitting outfits. It's not her typical thing. I mean, typically she's, you know, she's a role player in a movie and you know, the friend, not so much the bombshell, like you're saying, like right. she is in Addams Family Values. It goes against her typecast, but she's brilliant in it, and it really shows her range, too.
Yeah. And I love when I mentioned her quirkiness, but I'm thinking back to 16 Candles where she's wearing the neck brace and she can't get down to the water fountain. And she really seems to have a really good comic instinct for finding those moments where she can sort of make fun of herself. And I think that's the key to her being entertaining to watch, is that she's not afraid to look kind of foolish on screen sometimes. Mm. Because there's no vanity, I think.
Yeah, and she's great at that physical comedy in 16 Candles.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, she does come of that physical comedy kind of type in the Addams Family as well, but it comes from that evil damsel kind of role. But she does that really well. I think she's underrated.
Yeah. I think my favorite role is probably one of her most famous, is Working Girl. As Rusty mentioned, she was nominated for the Oscar for that, for Best Supporting Actress. And she plays this working girl from Staten Island who goes over to Manhattan with Melanie Griffith, and they work in an office. And I think what a lot of people remember about Joan Cusack in that movie is her hair. She has this giant wall of crispy, fried, giant 80s mall hair.
Aquanet sprayed hair.
Oh, yes. You could just smell it. Mm-hmm. You could smell that hair. And she's got this crazy makeup with the turquoise eyeshadow.
Big earrings.
Yeah. And again, what I love about Joan Cusack is that could have been a very cartoonish, clownish performance, but she gives it actual kind of depth. You sort of feel for that character. Cynthia is her name. And she really wants something better for her life. And she can't quite get it. You know, she sees what Melanie Griffith is doing, that she's succeeding on the corporate ladder, and she can't quite get it. And so it's got pathos involved, too, which I think Joan Cusack is great at.
Well, she could have just played that as any supporting actress, but she didn't. She gave it some meat to it. So you really bought that she was that girl from Staten Island, and she did that in her own way. And I think that's why she got nominated. It was done that well.
Yes. And that's an underrated romantic comedy, I think.
Yes.
That actually has a lot to say about women in the workplace. And Joan Cusack has a great line in that film that I've always remembered, where she's talking to Melanie Griffith about pretending to be something you're not. She says, "Well, I dance around my house in my underwear, but that doesn't make me Madonna."
Yes.
Thanks, Joan, for that line. Yeah. That was great. That's what secured her the Oscar nomination, I think.
When she brought that realism. So there's Melanie Griffith trying to pretend to be something she's not.
Yes.
And so Joan's there to bring the realism into the character. So.
Exactly. We're girls from Staten Island. That's what we are. Let's embrace that. So that's great. So, and so John Cusack has a lot of the same characteristics of Joan, I think. Quirky, likable.
Bit of an outsider. He's even more outsider. Of an outsider.
Exactly. But also a heartthrob. Yes, Heather?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I think a lot of women really dig John Cusack. So let's talk a little bit about John and kind of his career. He started a little after Joan, just a little bit.
Yeah, just briefly after. Well, I want to start with Heather just asking, so what movie is he the heartthrob? Where was the first time you realized he's a heartthrob?
Oh, Say Anything was really the, because he was the outsider, kind of rough, a little bit quirky, but more, you know, he was the guy who, I don't want to, you know, when I grow up, I don't want to make anything, buy anything, sell anything. You know, he was the rebel. Like when she brings him home to meet her dad, and you know, he's the guy that, he's not the jock, he's not the smart kid, but he's the guy that makes you feel like you're going against the grain, and he inspires you to do all these romantic things with him holding up the radio outside her window.
Oh, most iconic moment in an 80s movie. One of the most, I think.
And if you were to see that today, of course, it wouldn't go off as well, because there he is, this sweaty kickboxing guy in a trench coat. But back then, it was like, made me swoon a lot.
Because Lloyd Dobler could have been a real loser of a character right. in someone else's hands, I think.
Right. Well, and he overcame what a lot of people feel as a teen. You know, he felt like the outsider, and here he is getting the popular girl, the girl that was the valedictorian.
Right.
And here he was dating her and hopefully, you know, getting steamy in the back of his car with her. And that was like what every teenager dreams of.
Yes.
You know?
And it's Ione Skye. Who doesn't love her?
Right. Well, and it's the movie's written and directed by Cameron Crowe, which I'm not always the biggest Cameron Crowe fan, but this is a really well-made film. And that's part of what makes the John Cusack character so great, is that it's so well-written. It could have been a really badly written character,
oh,
or
yes.
the dad could have been way more melodramatic. John Mahoney as the father who ends up incarcerated. In somebody in lesser director's hands or a lesser writer's hands, those characters aren't real. They're stereotypes. But instead, this is a fully fleshed out movie. It's really one of the better movies from 1989, even, is Say Anything.
I would agree.
It's
yeah.
really solid. And John Cusack, certainly, I think for many women, that is the role that stands out. I didn't see that movie until I was in my 20s, I don't think. But the boombox above the head was so iconic. Everybody knew that.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody knew that movie.
For sure. I think that that's the time where they treated teenagers like a whole person in a way. Mm-hmm. They don't really do that nowadays with movies. They're very one-sided nowadays, but they had depth. They treated them as they were become adults, you know, and had Ione Skye's character been now, I would have hated her. But the way that they treated it that way, they gave her some humanity and some realism. And I think you're right that it's one of the more solid teenage-ish romantic films of the 80s.
Yeah, and it wasn't just a comedy, even though it's funny, but it had a lot of depth and kind of passion and emotion in it.
Oh, yeah. You really feel for her when her dad's imprisoned, right? She's totally trusted him. Mm-hmm. And that's taken out from under her, but it's just a really well-written film. And again, I'm not a Cameron Crowe fan necessarily, but that movie is so strong and so well-written and so well-acted. The performances are also good. It's one of the great 80s films, I think.
Yeah.
And it's more than just a teenage comedy, right? I mean, it really is. The John Mahoney character is a fleshed out character. Mm-hmm. You really feel for him, too. You really feel bad for him that here he is trying to look out for his daughter and take care of everything. And that gets ripped out. And he's been doing it, you know, even though he wants to do it, he's been doing it illegally. And you feel bad for this character. It's got real pathos, the film. It really matters.
Yeah. And I feel like to me, that's the career-defining role for John Cusack. I feel like that's what every other role he plays is measured against, which may be frustrating for him. I don't know. But I think that's the one that everyone really loves. And what about you, Rusty? Like, what is your fave?
I have so many favorites of his. But he in Gross Point Blank, he wrote Gross Point Blank, or he co-wrote it. And it's one of the films that really matters to him a lot. I love that movie. I love his energy in it. It was kind of a comeback role for him. Mm. He had played the 80s. I love the Better Off Dead film. That was the one that I grew up with as opposed to Say Anything. Mm. But Gross Point Blank, when that came out, his energy in that, he's just got this kinetic energy that's just brimming off the screen almost.
Oh, yeah.
It's so great. And the story's so fun. And I love the way it spirals towards the end so brilliantly. And he's this killer who's come back because he's still got a heart and because he still cares. It's really interesting to see that dynamic. Minnie Driver in it, by the way, is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible performance from her in that.
And a fantastic soundtrack, we should say. Like,
oh, great soundtrack.
One of the best soundtracks.
Yeah.
I think for a movie using pop music.
I liked it better than the soundtrack for High Fidelity. High Fidelity soundtrack is often pointed to, but it's a little bit too much classic rock for me.
Right.
Where Gross Point Blank was kind of all over the map and really brilliant. Brilliant soundtrack.
Yeah. And a great testament to John Cusack's likability, that he's playing a hired killer and still comes off likable and quirky, and you want him to succeed in a weird way.
Well, and you believe him. Like, who would have thought that, I mean, the guy who played Lloyd Dobler on Say Anything was going to eventually play this killer, and you buy it. I mean, you buy it in a comedic black comedy kind of way.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are theories that that's actually perhaps a grown-up Lloyd Dobler in a way, because you could almost see the Lloyd Dobler character doing that later in life, which I find interesting in the Cusack universe, if that's the same character.
That's interesting.
It's do just
we,
a theory.
Do we ever see Martin from Gross Point Blank throwing any roundhouse kicks or anything?
Oh, we'll have to watch carefully for that. I'm not sure.
That would be the one cue. Yes. And I want to point out that, you know, he trained with like a John Cusack trained with like this world-class kickboxer, this world champion kickboxer,
yeah.
and did to train for Say Anything, but then did it for another 18 years afterwards. And so he's like this sixth-degree black belt in kickboxing.
Sure.
Oh, that's even hot. That's hotter than I thought.
Isn't that cool?
More reasons to love John Cusack. So my favorite John Cusack film, as you mentioned, Rusty, is Better Off Dead. That's the one that I grew up with from 85. It plays Lane Meyer. And I feel like that's the movie where he sort of crystallized the John Cusack persona. He's kind of quirky, kind of nerdy, kind of a smart aleck, but not like a Ferris Bueller aggressive smart aleck. It was kind of a charming sort of funny, but parents would still like him kind of smart aleck. And Lane Meyer, this movie to me is interesting, Better Off Dead, because it's about a depressed teenager who spends the film contemplating suicide, and it's a comedy, like a really wacky comedy. And in a way, it's kind of like Harold and Maude, I guess, in that sense, that it's sort of making fun of death. And supposedly they had a lot of issues with marketing the film. They tried to hide the fact that it was about suicide. Which,
well, that's interesting.
Yeah, poses a marketing challenge for sure.
That's not your tagline.
Yeah, but it's really a great kind of fun Savage Steve Holland directed it, and he and Cusack also did One Crazy Summer together the next year with Bobcat Goldthwait and Demi Moore. And
I loved that as a kid.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, and they both had that kind of weird, like, surreal anarchy. There's like claymation sequences and music sequences, and Better Off Dead has one of my favorite 80s characters, the little newspaper boy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My $2.
Yeah, you better give me my $2.
I forgot about
that. Yeah, just so strange. And John Cusack, he's also skis in the film. It's just like a lot of wacky things going on in this film, but he grounds it in a real way.
It's grounded in a real way, but I would posit that you question the reality of all of it. And one of the scenes that really makes you do that is when he's working at the burger place and he becomes the mad scientist and makes the burger come alive.
Yes.
Right. That obviously didn't happen. And all of this stuff that's so over the top. Gee, Ricky, I'm sorry your mom's face blew up. All of that stuff is so over the top that you don't know whether Lloyd is really, is he telling this 15 years later, and this is his exaggerated version of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so it is grounded in reality. It absolutely is. But it's so fantastic, and there's so much craziness that he could learn to ski so quickly that everybody's Barney Rubble talks to him through the TV. Hey, could I date Beth?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there's this element of the fantastic in it that you can't ignore at all. I think it's a really important part of the film. And if you really were to start dissecting this comedy, this teen comedy, that is one place I always go, is what's really happening? How much of it is in his head or how much of it's real?
But then being an extremely depressed teenager is obviously something that a lot of people could relate to.
Sure.
Which I think John Cusack always did very well. Kind of a hangdog expression, I guess you would say, he kind of always has on his face. And we, as we were talking earlier, he has claimed he doesn't like this film that much.
Yeah.
Which isn't, you know, fine. He doesn't have to love the films we love.
Well, it's interesting. He's very refreshing in the way he talks about his movies. He's made some 70 films, and he's like, I've made 70 some films. What, are 10 of them maybe good? I've made 10 good ones?
Still good average.
It's still pretty good. And honestly, he's made more than 10 good movies. I think we all agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's easy, it's easy to point to 15 to 20 for me that are good.
Yeah.
But it's refreshing to hear somebody that's not typically, that's way off the mark for what other people will say about their films they've been in. Most people will stand up for their films. They'll do what they have to do. You know, you go in, you're a professional. You say, I worked on this film and it's great. You should go see it.
Right.
John Cusack.
Yeah, he's honest. He's brutally honest. And
yes,
we have to appreciate that. Yeah. And we can only hope that John and Joan make another film together, because they haven't made one for a while.
It's been a bit.
The Martian Child, I think, was maybe the last one in 2007-ish. But I think definitely one of the greatest sibling duos.
Oh, sure. Well, we should hear from Heather, too, your favorite John Cusack.
Oh, well, I would say my recent favorite John Cusack is the Love and Mercy biopic that he did, playing the late. He played Brian Wilson, and Paul Dano played the young Brian Wilson, and it kind of took the path of showing Brian Wilson's mental issues that he had over the years and stuff that I had no idea. I mean, I was, you know, you like the Beach Boys tune, but I had never known about Brian Wilson's story, and it gave me quite an appreciation for him that I didn't know I had once I started hearing the stories of what the struggles he went through and right. all, how creative he was. Like, I didn't know that he did a bunch of their music by himself and the things that he came up against with his family as, you know, abusing father and stuff like that. But John Cusack does such a good job that I think I don't see him. Like, it's very easy to look through his filmography and say, oh, you know, he's doing the typical John Cusack thing there. But with this movie, Love and Mercy, he really was Brian Wilson. I mean, and you had mentioned, Jeff, like, it was a toned down Brian Wilson, but he did so well. I never at one point said, oh, that's John Cusack playing Brian Wilson. It was so good and so tender and innocent and truthful, I think. And Paul Dano, of course, did a great job as the young Brian Wilson. And it just made me want to listen to more Beach Boys music.
Yes, me
it's
too.
It's a solid performance. And I think if he does more movies like that, I think he will definitely go forward even better than he already has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that movie was kind of incredible because the casting of Paul Dano and John Cusack as the same character, I thought, this is never going to work. Mm-hmm.
But it does.
And you totally buy into it.
Yeah. You see how Paul Dano fills the shoes of a young Brian Wilson and how he's struggling, not knowing, like, is he crazy? He even says to his brothers, I think I'm losing it. Because he's, right. you know, it's in the 60s, you know, late 50s, early 60s, where he's starting to have these mental issues and no one can tell him, you know, what's wrong with him. And I don't think they really get him help till later in life. And so they just want him to make music. And right. Paul Dano does that brilliantly. And he doesn't go over the top. He's just a very quiet, artistic portrayal.
Hmm. Yeah. And that was important that they didn't go over the top. Because with Brian Wilson, kind of a famously eccentric character, you could have made that kind of cartoonish. And neither one of them went there. And that's why it's a more effective film for it, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's one I need to check out.
Yeah, it's definitely
sure.
worth a watch. It's one of his best, I would say.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, though, because we've done a Nick Cage episode, and I think we all kind of wondered, in looking at John Cusack's career arc, it's not like Joan. Joan continues to make these nice supporting role movies that are good. He's been in some stuff the same year he does Love and Mercy. He also did Drive Hard that I watched, and that's very bad.
Ouch, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. It's really bad. His performance is so uninspired in that.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I do more working stuff now, you know, I'm a working actor. He's not working to produce these things that he loves as much anymore, like Gross Point Blank and High Fidelity. Instead, he's just doing his job.
Yeah, and the same year he was in Love and Mercy and Drive Hard, he also starred in Maps to the Stars, the David Cronenberg film, in which he plays a psychotic yoga instructor.
Mm, I need to see that.
Oh, yeah. You should see it. Really crazy. But that was all three films in one year, and it's so diverse. So I kind of like the fact that you can't really tell what John Cusack is going to do, which is kind of the Nick Cage phenomenon also.
Yeah, absolutely.
At this point in his career, I think it's up for grabs. He can do anything he wants.
Yeah, I agree.
Indeed. I want to do a real special shout out because we none of us mentioned them as our favorite films, but I think that, or our favorite John Cusack roles, but I think we all love them, is he did, four period pieces that are period pieces set in the early 1900s. Eight Men Out, The Journey of Natty Gann, Cradle Will Rock, and there's one other. Oh, Bullets Over Broadway.
Yeah.
Gee
oh,
whiz.
Yeah. yeah.
Those are all four fantastic movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely, you should check those out. If you haven't seen his period pieces from those, Eight Men Out is a really subdued role, but so good.
Oh, it's great.
And
yeah.
It's amazing.
Natty Gann, I watched last night, The Adventure of Natty Gann, or The Journey of Natty Gann. And it's about a young girl in the Depression era whose father has to leave her behind. And she meets John Cusack on the road trying to find her father. And his role is very limited, but he brings real substance and power to it that not everybody could have brought to such a small role.
Yeah. And I guess I would also like to give a shout out to the movie Tapeheads, which I love Tapeheads, but I feel like it's not a movie a lot of people know. Early 90s, Tim Robbins and John Cusack working in the music industry. Really fun movie, great soundtrack.
Interesting, Tim Robbins. That's also, he directed Cradle Will Rock. He also directed Bob Roberts. John Cusack is in that briefly as a Saturday Night Live host. And he's really good. He delivers this great monologue that is a really one of the great monologues of all time in film. That's real subversive and making you question Saturday Night Live.
Oh, it is time for a Cusack binge watching party, I think.
When we didn't mention being John Malkovich.
Of course, being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
Maybe the best film he's been in.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, just as a film.
Right. Yes. It's an amazing film from 1999. One of the best films from an amazing year.
Right.
In film.
Those are tons to watch. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be very busy with the Cusacks here. Thanks, Rusty and Heather, for chatting about the Cusacks. This has been great.
Joy.
It was fun.
Yeah. Next on Film Club, we're going to be talking about the role of women directors in Hollywood. It's been a big topic of conversation as of late. So we're going to be discussing that, and that will be rule number 835 of Film Club. If a woman can secure the presidential nomination, we can have a woman directing a Marvel superhero movie, I think.
And win an Oscar for it.
And win an Oscar.
Yes.
So we'll discuss that next time on Film Club. So thanks, Heather. Thanks, Rusty.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for tuning in.
And thanks, everyone, for listening.